When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUp.com.
The Bills make me wanna. Yes!
What is up, Bills Mafia? It is a After Dark edition, although I guess all of our episodes are After Dark. This is really After Dark of Shout, a Buffalo Bills football podcast, brought to you as always by Tops Friendly Markets. Tops is in the red zone all throughout the playoffs for football play offers. Score big on flavor and savings. Enhance your playoff weekend by creating recipes inspired by the distinct flavors of the playoff team's cities. Top expert butchers have curated their recommended game day recipes over at topsmarkets.com/football. From touchdown-worthy appetizers to hearty main dishes, discover a winning lineup of recipes that brings taste from around the country to your table. And I know a lot of Bills fans are still kind of wallowing, if you will, although I've talked to people later in the week, and I feel like it's gone from that wallowing stage to now an acceptance stage and a looking ahead stage. Ryan, is that kind of like what you've kind of viewed or here over the last couple of days?
Yeah, definitely took a few days for some Bills fans to kind of get past this loss. But later in the week, I have seen more discussion about what's next, what the Bills must do, a lot more draft discussion than we certainly saw a week ago today. So it does seem like they've turned the page, and I'm sure they'll be rooting this weekend against Kansas City pretty hard, but it seems like they've moved past this loss, at least for the time being.
So this is a cool show, and I you're not seeing like in doubles. We actually do have four boxes live here on the show today, and that is because the boys from the Buffalo Bread podcast are in the house, J.J. Bryce, Dan Roberts. I want to give welcome to the show, first of all. Let me say that, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, no. So really cool. I kind of put this out in the insiders yesterday, let everybody know that JJ and Dan were coming on. JJ has been kind of somebody that I've wanted to have on for a while. I remember talking about when you launched your podcast a couple years ago, kind of getting into the space. We worked together at Blockbuster. We were just doing the math. Like almost 15 years
that
ago.
That doesn't fit in my head, man.
We're old, dude.
Yes,
we are old.
We are.
I'm much older, I think. How old are you, actually? No, I don't think
I'm 40. I just turned 40.
Okay, so I'm one year older than you. I'm not way older than you.
Right.
And the reason why this kind of came about right now is because I ran into Dan last month at Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York. And we did an episode of Shout Live there. And, you know, we started talking and he started telling me about his podcast, and he has this co-host, and then he mentioned his name, and I'm like, JJ. I mean, we go way back, and it's small world, the Buffalo story. Welcome to the show. Tell everybody a little bit about what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the advantage of Buffalo Bread Podcast, which for a long time we were keeping the receipts. We rebranded when the Buffalo Bills became a contender. It felt weird to be keeping the receipts against media members talking down about our beloved Buffalo Bills when they were also saying that the Buffalo Bills were the likely favorite for the Super Bowl. So we had to kind of, you know, double down, move on, as we talked about with Bills Mafia right now. We had to figure out a new way. and we chose Buffalo Bread Podcast. Dan and I both were born into fandom, and we have the great advantage. We don't have to have journalistic integrity as a fan podcast, so we can be biased. We can say things because we're not, you know, reporting to an editor of any kind. So it's a good time. We like to, you know, weekly during the season, break down games, do previews, and review the Bills' effort on the field. And then the off season, we do a few pods here and there. We do a one of my favorite things is we actually do a around the AFC live mock draft with fans of other teams that we know in our lives. And we get in a room and we just crank through a simulator and we pick for our teams and explain what we think that will happen, you know, what that pick would do for the AFC East as we go. But yeah, thanks for having us. This is great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I have known JJ since 2006, I want to say,
when we
first met, right? And I was born into this Bills Mafia thing. It's ever since I was a child, I was raised into it. This beautiful, agonizing, yet somehow awesome experience of being a Bills fan. And then when I connected with JJ in 2006, I had like another Buffalo Bills mind to kind of sharpen my own knowledge on. And then we've just been friends and talking Bills ever since. And starting the podcast him with a few years ago was one of the best things that probably has ever happened to me. Not just because we got a chance to put our takes out into the wild for other people to kind of like deliberate on, but it just gave me another excuse to talk Bills once a week with my buddy. So yeah, it's been an awesome experience. And again, I'm totally excited to be on this one, Matt.
So cool. There's so many cool stories in Bills Mafia, how people come together, how people choose to talk about this team, and everybody wants to talk about this team. There's a lot to talk about right now, Ryan, and I want to start with the coordinator conundrum, if you will, because, you know, the Bills have a couple of decisions that they're going to have to make, and, you know, obviously on the defensive side of the ball, Sean McDermott's going to have to decide if he wants to continue in the role that he's been in the last year, calling the defense. It seems like it's something that he's liked getting back into that. I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding over the last, like, 2 months of the season. This defense, even with a couple guys down, was really good. And the problem that you're going to run into, though, is that guys on his staff that have done a really good job developing players, i.e. Bobby Babich, who now has three interviews lined up with the Packers, the Dolphins, and the Giants. If he leaves, I mean, you're down somebody that you've relied upon not only in the linebackers room over the last two seasons, but in the safeties room before that. And then, oh, by the way, the Joe Brady conversation as well. So let's start there. Where do you, and then we'll kind of go around the horn here and get everybody's take on it. Ryan, where do you sit on Joe Brady as a candidate? Do you feel like he should be a candidate? And if not, is there somebody else you think the Bills should consider?
No, he should definitely be a candidate. I mean, he took over a Ken Dorsey playbook and he made it work down the stretch for this team, helped them get on that win streak, implemented the running backs more than what we saw out of Dorsey, especially in terms of pass catching at times with those backs. I thought he did a really good job at the end of the season. He gets the ringing endorsement from Josh Allen and some other players talking about how much they really like Joe Brady in the system. And, you know, I would like to think that at that interview that they're going to have or that they had with him, they probably sat down and said, well, what changes are you going to bring to this offense? What is the Joe Brady offense look like? And, you know, it's a very small sample size when he was at Carolina, but he was able to get production and get some decent stats out of his receivers there in Carolina and take an offense that was lacking overall talent and kind of make it work for him. And, you know, I just got that message, man. I think it's because the mic was too far away from me. How about now? That better? Yeah. Sorry about that. Mic was too far away. So I do just think that really at the end of the day, Joe Brady makes a lot of sense from that perspective, but the Bills should also do their due diligence. And that's why I like the fact that they're going to interview Thad Lewis and who is getting a lot of praise for what he did with Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. And a lot of Bills fans want to see Eric Bieniemy potentially get a call and see what he can do. And, you know, I don't think the Bills are necessarily in a rush when it comes to Joe Brady. They can kind of see what's out there. I mean, he did one head coaching interview with Atlanta. That job's already been filled and taken. He still has that interim label here, but he hasn't really received any offensive coordinator interest to my knowledge, at least that I've seen reported. So they can go out and they can at least see what else is out there. But
for Brady himself, it just makes a lot of sense for both parties to kind of continue where they left off and let him maybe try to figure out what other pieces does he need for this offense. Because I really do think that considering the circumstances, he did a great job this year.
JJ, I'll go to you next, but I want to throw one little nugget on Brady that I think is super interesting to consider from the Bills' perspective if they do want to hand this thing over to him full time. You know, when last offseason, you figure everybody in the offensive room, quarterbacks coach, offensive line coach, tight ends coach, they all have a seat at the table. They all get to have a take on a prospect or a free agent, right? But if you're the quarterbacks coach, if you're overseeing Josh Allen and there's Ken Dorsey and then Cromer, who has all this experience, has been all these different places, and you're trying to find this run game, I don't know how loud his voice was in the Deontay Hardy decision and the Trent Sherfield decision and maybe even the Justin Shorter decision. I like Joe Brady from the perspective he's 34 years old. He has a lot under his belt already. I think he's an innovative mind, and I think that given an entire offseason to kind of recalibrate this thing and bring in some players that he kind of gets on Brandon Bean's radar, I think is super interesting. And you know that he already has a great working relationship with Josh Allen.
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt. And I think that the other piece that I think is that we talked about quite a bit on our pod, but it's worth considering, is that Joe Brady did something Ken Dorsey wasn't willing to do. He looked at an opponent and decided to hit them exactly where it hurts, hard and repeatedly and unendingly. And that worked in so many games. On that stretch run of six wins, they were just doing the thing to the team that the opponent could not stop. You know, the insane rushing production against the Cowboys, hitting, you know, tight ends against the Steelers, like the kinds of things that the opponent was suffering in, Joe Brady was attacking. And I agree with you. I think that an opportunity for him to utilize the weapons he has, or even, you know, tailor make some of those weapons, looking at the scope of who they're, you know, facing in the next season, what the AFC East is shaping up to be, and the things that, you know, and shared opponents or common opponents, things they saw or didn't see. I think that's a great opportunity for Joe Brady. And I would think that the Bills would be smart to kind of, you know, keep him in the fold. I mean, Thad Lewis, I saw your piece, Ryan. He's the dolphin killer from his brief stint as the Bills quarterback. And that's something to be said. But I think that Joe Brady has kind of proven in the run that, if nothing else, he was capable of motivating players and getting them kind of unified behind a vision. And I think that that's something that maybe Ken Dorsey didn't seem to have, because at times the offense was disjointed. At times it was too much expectation of everyone performing a perfect execution on every play. And that just didn't seem to be, you know, working for them in the middle of the season.
Dan, anything you want to add to that?
Yours?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Round the horn.
I was gonna let Dan just pick it up there, but I should have thrown it off the backboard. Yeah. You really just slam it down. I'm sorry. Yeah.
You didn't know. You're good. You're good. No, I agree. I mean, with Brady, I think it's smart for the Bills to buy the upside. And I've seen a lot of chatter on Bills social media, Bills fans social media threads and things like that, you know, really hammering home kind of what they would call the conservative style of that Kansas City game. But I think it's unfair to lay the footprint for that game as the only quality you're going to remember of the Joe Brady offense. What Brady was able to do is especially in maximizing the efficiency of this team in the red zone. His ability to scheme running backs open in the low red zone really freed up a lot of things for Allen, forcing linebackers to come off the snap, see a free running James Cook or a Ty Johnson, lose the spy on Allen, and allowing Allen to scamper into the end zone, or create a lot of these amazing opportunities for Cook to catch balls out of the backfield in the red zone. It added an element that didn't exist previously in other versions of this Bills offense. So for me, when I see wrinkles like that, I see a guy that knows how to develop elements of a passing game at every level. And I think he's earned the shot to have a full offseason and see how he can bring in his own weapons, but then utilize some of the squad that's already on the team to further elevate his scheme.
Yeah, and I think this is different than the situation the Bills were in with Dorsey, in that they were handing over an opportunity to somebody that never did it before. And when they promoted Brady, you know, Brandon Bean was quick to bring this up. I think he corrected somebody in his hour-long press conference the other day and just like, well, don't forget, he called plays at LSU, which I was a little bit mixed up on initially because he was the wide receivers coach, but he's also the passing game coordinator and called a lot of their passing sets. And then obviously his stint in Carolina, which didn't go well, but I think in a lot of times for young play callers, that's needed. I think one of the missteps that the Bills might look back on is if Bobby Babich signs with one of these other teams. And I don't know the status of his contract. A lot of times position coach signed 2-year deals, which I'm guessing he's coming up to the end of his, if he signed a new one when he became the linebackers coach. I don't know the status of that, but if he leaves, if he takes one of these other jobs and Sean McDermott continues in his role, I don't know. I think that you're now saying goodbye to somebody that you developed and you're not even getting a chance to see the fruits of your labor and let them kind of roll with it. I mean, you talk to Jordan Poyer, you talk to Micah Hyde, Bernard, Milano, Edmonds, they rave about this guy. When he walks into the room at 38, 39 years over the last couple of years, you're just wowed. He feels like he's going to be a head coach in a couple of years. And I feel like that's the kind of guy that you want overseeing your defense, Ryan.
Yeah, I remember training camp. We had him for pre-practice one day, and we talked on the podcast, and I said, this guy seems like a star in the making from a coaching perspective. And the work that he did this year with the linebacker position, getting Terrell Bernard after missing a portion of camp, throwing him out there in week one and seeing how well he developed. And obviously, you knew what you had in Matt Milano at that time. But look at the work he did with Tyrell Dodson. You know, there was a time late in camp where he said, oh, Dodson's just not that guy. We don't even know if he's someone that you want on that 53-man roster. And then he goes on and has this career year. When it comes to this decision, it should be an easy one for Sean McDermott. You hand the reins over to Bobby Babich. You don't want to just give him the title in passing and still have McDermott call the plays, because I don't know if that's enough at this point in time to convince him to stay in Buffalo when you have other teams calling, the Packers, the Dolphins, et cetera, who want to really, you know, get this guy in there and have him be the play caller. With that type of competition, I don't think McDermott can just say, well, we're going to give you the title, but I want to keep calling plays. And, you know, to Sean McDermott's credit, he put together some really good game plans defensively. You go back to that Dallas Cowboys game. Dallas was riding high in that matchup. You go to the Chiefs game in the regular season, holding them to 17 points. Some of the ways that he called games late when those last few games, the Miami game, when players are dropping like flies and holding them to 14 points. Pittsburgh game, I can go on and on here. That's all well and good, but the one area where Sean McDermott has failed over and over again is against the Chiefs in the playoffs. I wouldn't mind giving a fresh mind like Bobby Babich the opportunity to kind of get the ball and run with it. That doesn't mean it's going to be smooth sailing. You can say the same with Joe Brady, but you got to let these guys kind of take their lumps and learn on the fly and learn on the job. So to me, Babich makes the most sense for the defensive coordinator position. I've seen some of the chat points in here. You know, Ron Rivera, he's had a nice career as a coach. You know, there's no real longevity there if you're bringing in a veteran like that to be your DC. If you just let Babich walk, you're not only just losing a guy that is probably arguably your best assistant on this coaching staff, but then you have some other holes to fill. At least if you have him as that defensive coordinator, he might be able to say, well, you know, I think this assistant or this guy or this person could come in and assume my position at linebackers coach, and I can still help there and kind of have a hand in it, just like McDermott obviously had a big hand in the defense as a whole this past season. So to me, Babich just is the obvious choice, and the Bills need to make sure that he knows if you stay in Buffalo, you know, you are the DC and you are calling plays.
We got a super chat here from Justin. Opponents quarterback rating the last five playoff losses: 121, 123, 127, 101, 131, 11 touchdowns, no interception. McDermott, extremely lucky to be making these decisions. You know, the thing too that I take, and this is a good transition point, thank you for the super chat. I know you guys want to get into some of the more, you know, the deep dive analytical numbers from that Chiefs game. The one thing with handing over the DC role to somebody else that I think would benefit McDermott is maybe being able to remove himself from the play to play and see things from a 30,000 foot view. Larry brings it up right here. AJ Klein shouldn't have been on the field in that game. Like, let's be honest. You saw it early on. How many times have you seen this season the Bills give up basically five straight scoring drives? That's what it was. I mean, they had the end of the half drive. You know, you kind of throw that out, but a couple of field goals, three touchdowns. I mean, it's like the ship is sinking and you're bailing water out. You're bailing water it out. You know, you need to kind of find a way to like plug up that hole. And that hole was AJ Klein. And then he got hurt, like, I think in the second quarter. And then he went back in. It was just ugly. And I know that it's not a perfect fit. Like, throwing Dorian Williams out there is not like the kind of fix that I think a lot of Bills fans are comfortable with. But sometimes you got to just do things. And also, I think this is another McDermott problem. Why wasn't Dorian Williams ready to play? It's because he didn't play all season long. Like, right. That's another thing that I think Brandon Bean even is kind of pushing on them. Like, listen, we're getting into this year. The salary cap is what it is going to be. You're going to have to play rookies. So it's going to be the situation, JJ.
Yeah, it's gonna force their hand, I think, and that might be a good thing because the Chiefs were put in that position once Patrick Mahomes' contract ballooned, and they had to, and they had, you know, the youngest defense in the Super Bowl, I think, by average age last year. And so I think they're going to be in a position where they have to do that. And this is a blind spot that we talk about all the time, Dan and I, of McDermott, and maybe to a lesser extent Bean, but definitely McDermott, and definitely with defensive players, is he holds on to players way too long into their career and trusts, you know, and doesn't have enough trust in the process of bringing in new players, rookie players, younger players. And so we get an AJ Klein off the couch trying to cover Travis Kelce over the middle, which is a failing proposition from top to bottom. Anybody can see it. And we talked all the time about Dorian Williams is like the green shell in Mario Kart. Like, you just fire that thing off. Like, it's not going to find the leader in the race, but it's going to, you know, go very fast in one direction. And so a good scheme can use that. That's a great tool if, you know, cause his athleticism is through the roof. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think that we can talk, and I know Dan has a lot of stats about, you know, the specific Kansas City game and even the Bills offense in general over the course of the season. But when we look at those metrics, if the Buffalo Bills were able to cause three punts, two punts, one punt, you know, like, I think they maybe caused one punt in that game. Mm-hmm. If they were able to just get the Kansas City Chiefs off the field, the Kansas City Chiefs were like, they only had five third downs. Like, they just were not, they never struggled to move the ball. And you're right. It's this kind of sense of, well, the scheme is the scheme. The defense is the defense. We're going to be fundamentally sound and we're going to give up yards, but we're not going to give up big plays. That only works if it's actually working. At some point, like you said, you have to look at it and say, okay, this is not working. We're going to put five safeties on the field and do some wacky Belichick type stuff. You know, like, we got to find a way to get faster and kind of shut down some of these third down or second down conversions.
Yeah. JJ and I had talked at the bye after the Eagles game that our big hope coming out of that was that McDermott was at that point going to turn over play calling to Bobby Babich. We saw a lot of slippage, I think, at that point in the season in McDermott's game management overall. Some of his fourth down decisions were regressing from the year past too. And we chalk that up to simply the burden of having to coordinate the defense, but still be the CEO head coach of the entire unit. Bringing in Babich now, I agree, keeps a young mind on this coaching staff if you put time and energy and effort into developing. But he's also a guy that I think is perfectly suited for the time this roster is about to step into. With the salary cap situation the Bills are at, they've got to face the fact that they have to play a lot more high variance players that may ultimately have a higher ceiling when it comes to affecting the game. Kyer Elam is a perfect example of this. In back-to-back years in wildcard games, that dude has had a pick that is either sealed a win or come in a pivotal moment for this Bills to keep them ahead when they needed it. But that also comes with a tug on a jersey here and a flag for defensive holding or a PI, right? Those are the things that you need to learn to tolerate and allow game reps for the coaches to work that stuff out of so that you can maximize some of the higher ceiling of some of these athletes you got. And I would put Dorian Williams in that pocket too. So keeping a guy like Babich, he has a proven track record for working with a lot of those players. Putting him in charge of the defense just allows him sort of carte blanche to then work with the defensive roster as a whole and really maximize some of those young players you know you're going to have to financially, but also schematically rely on moving forward.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Charles says you can't play every rookie, and I do agree with that. But I think that there have been spots all season long with injuries where Dorian Williams could have gotten many more snaps than he's had. And I think there's times in games where you can work on certain things. Like, let's be honest, that Raiders game was like a blowout, right? Like, there was a couple blowouts this season. Like, get guys into the game and get them snaps because they're not getting them in practice. And I just think that with Milano out, and Tyrell Dotson's history, like every time that guy's gotten into a game, and he was really good this year, and he was also really healthy this year for the most part. But over the course of the season, he kind of got worn down. The shoulder injury took him out late. A couple people mentioned in the chat, like, oh, well, Dorian Williams didn't train at middle linebacker. Yeah, I know, but guess who did and played it all training camp? Tyrell Dotson. So, and like, listen, what have we heard all season long from these defensive coaches? They're interchangeable positions, mm-hmm. right? Like, of yep. course, you have to call the defense, and that puts another layer on to your plate. But Dotson's done it before. Like, it's not anything new. He was doing it when he was a rookie in training camp in the preseason. So I'm not worried about that in that spot to put Dotson out there, who's played and started all season, has been so good, and then have Williams play next to him, who is just – listen, I think he flies a lot, around a little bit more. But here's the thing, Ryan. All this back seven talk is kind of a moot point because the Bills did not get it done at the line of scrimmage. And right. it's what they spent all this money on, all these draft resources on. And I think Ed Oliver, if you look at the end of that Pittsburgh game, like, what's the biggest difference of Ed Oliver this year? The snap percentage. He's playing like 80% of the snaps. Like, that's completely different than in years past. I think he ran out of gas. He looked like he was exhausted at the end of that Steelers game, and he was invisible. Now, here's another part that's interesting. The Bills are just so unlucky. These injuries that popped up for them, Joe Tooney dominated in that game last week. He's out this week against the Ravens. Timing at this time of the year is so important, and it didn't work out in that way for the Bills.
No, timing was huge for the Bills because, again, the Miami game, the Pittsburgh game, they started dropping like flies across the board on this defense, especially linebackers, members of the secondary. And while the D-line itself stayed healthy, you had Ed Oliver playing so many reps, and you were still trying to ease DaQuan Jones back in and get him kind of up to speed. And while, you know, having him out there was certainly a benefit, he never looked like the same DaQuan Jones that was out there weeks one through four, and that's understandable. And then you just had a plethora of other guys. You had Linval Joseph, who you brought in off the couch. You had Puna Ford, who you couldn't decide one week if you're going to play him, one week if you're going to have him inactive. And Jordan Phillips throughout this season, who was, you know, very ineffective and looked his age. So they just had a lot of guys at that position. Tim Settle did have a better year here in Buffalo, but now it's like back to the drawing board almost across the entire defensive line. You have AJ Epenesa and Leonard Floyd both hitting free agency. And we talked earlier this week, Matt, about the projections, and Epenesa's projection, I think, was about $5.8 million, something like that. I would like to think that that's something where that the Bills could get on board with. I think he's scratching the surface. 6.5 sacks the last 2 years, showing more in terms of getting hands up, passes defensed, interceptions, etc. But now all of a sudden they're kind of thin at defensive end, and you have that Von Miller contract that you have to have, and you have to hold on to him for one more year. You've seen flashes from Greg Rousseau, but what about the other guys? What about the depth there? And then defensive tackle, Ed Oliver is literally the only guy under contract right now for 2024, and that's going to be one position that the Bills are going to have to address in the NFL draft, probably pretty early as well. You know, day two, early day three, you want to get some guys in there that can help Ed Oliver, can help this defensive tackle rotation, because that's one thing Sean McDermott's always been big on. And even if he hands over the, you know, defensive coordinator play calling to Babich, he's always going to be very high on rotating his defensive ends, rotating his defensive tackles. And right now they have a lack of bodies, and they need to figure out, you know, the best system going forward in terms of keeping guys fresh. You can't have Ed Oliver playing so many reps. I know this was a career year for him. He outplayed the contract that he signed in the offseason, but you need to have him so he has some juice left in a pivotal game against the Chiefs.
You don't have to spend a high pick on a defensive tackle. Like, the Bills drafted Boogie Basham at 61 a couple years ago. I was pounding the table to trade back in that spot. Who do we like all throughout draft season that's turned into an absolute stud? Aleem McNeil, who's playing in the NFC championship game. Like, these guys are littered at the end of day two. Like, the guys that, like, just have the measurables that they like anyway, the size, the speed, the get off, like, that could do multiple things, that could play that space eating role, but could also rush the passer. Like, you're going to be able to find those guys in the draft. And I don't know how deep at defensive tackle, we haven't really started to look at that position too closely yet, but there's going to be a guy there. JJ, I want to, before we transition, because I want to transition a little bit to the dive that you guys have done on the numbers and what it tells us, not only about, you know, what the Bills have to do, but like kind of setting up the offseason here a little bit. But before I do, I want to tell everybody to make sure that you are signed up to be a Shout Bills Insider. Text 716-528-6727. You get a 2-week free trial, then it's $3.99 a month after that. And the Shout text line is brought to you by Kerry C. Beyer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litro, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, give them a call at 716-852-1234 or check out litrolaw.com. I will move over right now and I'll let you slip into the driver's seat, my friend.
All right. So to talk about some of our analytics of this offense and what we saw in the Kansas City game, specifically around the offensive production and explosive plays, was an all-time low. And it was, one, by design, but two, it showed something that I think, you know, Dan can speak to a little bit of a real difference that Joe Brady brought to Josh Allen's game, and a real hole in this offensive team that needs to be filled if we are going to do anything in the next season for the Bills. Dan?
Yeah. So, you know, I think what Brady did a really good job of this season was de-risking this offense. There was a lot being made under Dorsey about Josh Allen's turnovers, some of the long downfield interceptions that he was throwing, arm punts, if you will, in a lot of cases for Josh. And Brady came in with a really clear goal. He wanted to maximize Josh's skill set, but in a different way that had been done before. He wanted to get Josh reconnected with the parts of his game that seemed to give him a lot of energy on the field, thereby using his legs a lot. I think Josh's rushing attempts doubled under Brady what they were previously with Dorsey. And he also wanted to figure out how to get these running backs involved with the game as well. So the Bills ran, I think, the second most scripted rushing attempts under Brady from week 10 on at 46%. And they did that with a lot of intentionality. And they wanted Josh to focus on his short area yardage accuracy as well. There's an area where it looks like Josh has regressed this season, if you look at his NFL Next Gen stats, and that is average air yards to completion. Josh has usually been a monster in this category, 6 yards a season, 7 yards a season. This season was his lowest of his career at 5.8. But a lot of that had to do with the way that Brady was scheming this offense to attack the short area yards, the easy stuff, the simple stuff that we kept saying.
The bubble screens,
quick out to right wide receiver screen.
Right, yeah. Exactly. That kind of stuff, right? But also running backs out of the backfield. And you saw that happen too with Stephon Diggs and the way his route tree changed under Brady. He was not attacking the deep parts of the field this season in the way that he had previously been schemed up. 49% of his routes this season were 5 yards or less beyond the line of scrimmage. And he ranked 50th this season in average yards run per route. He was just running a lot more short stuff. So there was an intentionality behind that scheme to get Josh really focused more on the short area yardage situations and take advantage of the free stuff defenses were getting to them. An area that they need to improve, and that unfortunately they couldn't in the Kansas City game, is when defenses then condensed into those areas. then can you take it over the top and can you land those explosive plays? And that's where they really struggled this season. And we saw it happen in the Kansas City game too. This team for the year was ranked 28th in explosive play percentage, which is their lowest in the Allen era, save for his rookie season. So when defenses kind of hit that counterpunch on Brady and they were like, all right, we see what you're doing. We see what you're doing out of the backfield. We see what you're doing with Diggs. We're going to bring everybody up. And then we think our DBs are better than your wide receivers and man. We're going to dial up a couple of timely blitzes and we're going to make your wide receivers beat us 20 yards down the field. And more often than not, unfortunately, the pass catchers for this team, they couldn't do it. They couldn't gain the separation that they needed to take advantage of a lot of those deep throws from Allen, but they also lacked a wide receiver. Even when Gabe Davis was healthy, they lacked a guy with a catch radius and the ability to position their body for those deep throws to really win at the point of catch. They were losing a lot of those battles, deep shot after deep shot. And you saw it from the Jacksonville game on this season. Teams got way more comfortable blitzing Josh and putting their DBs in man against our pass catchers because they became more and more confident as the season went on. We weren't going to win those matchups downfield. And we saw that in the Kansas City game. As soon as Spags condensed that defense in the third and fourth quarter, we did not have the answers over the top that we needed.
Well, and additionally, on top of that, you know, of all of the quarterbacks remaining in the playoffs, they all have less than a 13% aggressive pass rating on Next Gen Stats, which means that they are throwing to receivers only 13% of the time with a defender within 1 yard. Josh Allen had a higher percentage at 15%, and that says something to, you know, even the much maligned Kansas City receiver room. You know, we can maybe chalk it up as the Patrick Mahomes effect, but they are providing some kind of separation. All of those teams have receiving targets that are providing separation in man coverage that the Bills just weren't able to do. And in years past, Cole Beasley has been, you know, a zone eater. And I think that they've been focused in the recruiting, you know, in bringing in new players on beating zone coverage because they were seeing so many too high shells. And that's been successful. I think that Khalil Shakir is great at that. I think Dalton Kincaid is great at that. Dawson Knox, when he's healthy and when he doesn't, you know, drop it, is great at that. They have those zone beaters. That's still a massive component to Diggs' game. But I think what we saw was Stephon Diggs took a step back in his ability to beat hard single-man coverage. And without anyone else who was really threatening man-to-man, they could blitz and they wouldn't have to worry about Stephon Diggs if they had him in bracket coverage with safety help.
I also, Ryan, think on top of all that, there was a trust issue at times. Like James Cook dropping passes left and right all season long. Like that was supposed to be his, like the thing that separates him. And he still had this great season, but just imagine what that final yardage number looks like if he doesn't have all those drops, because of those drops, maybe there isn't at least a second thought sometimes from Josh, like when thinking about targeting him. And like, you think about the Trent Sherfields of the world, like they were left in a situation where they had to target him in the Kansas City game, but you saw the results of it deep down the field. It's just, he's not an effective player in that area. And to your point, JJ, like that's something that they have to address specifically in the draft, perhaps in free agency. And that's something we've been talking about, Ryan, is them doing that and being deliberate about it. It can't just be like, you know, Brandon Bean goes in the offseason and it's like, we really want to add speed. No. It's not we want to. It's you have to.
Yeah, it is you have to. And it almost says you have to do it in the first round of this draft. And I know there's a lot of good wide receivers that'll be off the board by pick 28. The Bills do have 10 picks. If they really wanted to, they can move up a little bit, I would like to think. They're not getting, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. or anything like that, but there are some really good guys you could get in the early 20s or even waiting at pick 28. So that's the first thing you do. You try to draft that guy that you say can compete for wide receiver number two this year, can stretch the field, can be the heir apparent possibly for Stephon Diggs when given the time. And then you kind of do some bargain bin shopping and hope for the best when it comes to free agency, because the Bills aren't going to break the bank and bring in any of these high-end wide receivers. But, you know, it's what they did with Hardy, and Hardy actually ended up getting a pretty decent contract from the Bills. But they tried to bring that in. It's why they brought in Andy Isabella during training camp, a guy that has speed. They do have to take some flyers on guys. If Joe Brady ends up being the guy for offensive coordinator, I wouldn't mind the Bills trying to trade a day three pick to the Panthers for Terrace Marshall Jr., a guy that he played for him at LSU. And when they were, reunited in Carolina, Marshall Jr. just was gushed about what Joe Brady could do. And he's that big guy that has a lot of speed. And when given opportunities in Carolina, he's done some good things, but he's been buried on a depth chart there. It's going to be another new coach. It's going to be another new regime that might be willing to move on from this guy that doesn't have much left on his deal. And if they can salvage a day three pick for him, that type of player makes sense for Buffalo too. So you're not going to get the best wide receivers in the world based on their cap situation, but you have to get creative and come up with some plans in terms of what can we do to strengthen this wide receiver room? Because yeah, Khalil Shakir, he looks great. He looked the part down the stretch for the team in year two. You still have a very good wide receiver in Stephon Diggs. You love what you have in Dalton Kincaid. You like what you still have in Dawson Knox, and you have some pass-catching backs. But that wide receiver depth itself needs a lot of work.
Yeah, and I think there's – I'll just give you a quick primer on four names that Bills Mafia could pay attention to. I know you guys aren't getting into draft stuff too deep, but Devontae Walker out of North Carolina, Keon Coleman, Florida State, Adonai Mitchell in Texas – and Xavier Leggett, South Carolina. They're all like 6'3", 6'4", catch point monsters who also have deep and quick speed. It's the kind of thing where this is a great class for what the Bills are looking for, which is a separator who can beat you physically. They don't have that. They've not had that since they tried with, oh my gosh, what's the Carolina Panther that they got early in Josh Allen's career?
Calvin Benjamin.
They tried to get the big body.
Why did you drop him? Because I just saw the video on the sideline of the preseason game when Cam Newton came up to him to talk to him because he was talking trash about him in the media, and they had that awkward exchange. I literally saw that video like 2 hours before we started.
Classic moment. But yeah, that's like the last time they had a big body receiver who was, a pretty high draft stock type player who was meant to be, the catch point monster. They need one of those players.
Absolutely. I would add one name to that possible free agent list. And it's hard to gauge what kind of contract he's get because he played in Chicago on a rookie deal, and you can't really gauge that offense too well. But Darnell Mooney could be a guy the Bills could kick the tires on as well, for sure. He's got speed. He's got inside-outside flexibility when it comes to his positioning as a wide receiver. And he may be in the Bills' free agent price range as well, depending on where the cap lands.
Price range is a very important disclaimer when talking about a lot of free agent targets, because I think somebody, might have been Jeremy from WGR, put it out today, like PFF put like Michael Pittman in the Bills as like an option, and he's like, this is just unfair. It's like a huge tease because that's not really in the Bills' price range. All right, let's flip it real quick because we got to wrap this up here in a minute or two. I want to get into the defense a little bit and kind of some of the things that you think what you took away from the Chiefs game that may shape how you view how the Bills need to maybe fix some things on their defense this offseason.
Well, I think for me, the biggest thing, and this is hard. It's hard. This is heartbreaking to say as a Bills fan, is that they need faster safety play. And I think that we saw a number of times on long and late downs when they were able to get the, Chiefs behind the sticks a little bit, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde coming in clutch situations to tackle somebody after they'd already gained the first down, right? Like that. And that's different than we've experienced as, Bills fan base, people who watch the game, watch the team, is that it used to be in years prior that you'd see Poyer or Hyde fly into the frame and make a pass breakup, make an interception. And now it's more likely they're making a tackle. And that's great. Like, that's the thing that Sean McDermott swears by is, the ability to have good sound fundamentals. But that's not what they need. They need the big play moment. And so I think that one of the big moves, and this is actually going to help the other phase that Dan can talk a little bit about, is, in stopping the run. The McDermott defense has not been great at stopping the run. They've pretty regularly ranked low in the league in terms of yards per carry average by opposing rushers. But the safety play can help that if they get faster, younger, somebody who's kind of more in the box presence, they will be able to do a lot more. And that's nothing to say. I mean, like, I love Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. They're two of my favorite Bills of all time. And Poyer stepped up big time when we figured out that Terrell Dodson was not going to be able to play on passing downs in the box like that. The whole, you know, safety shift down, bring wrap in to cover the deep third. That was a great move. Sean McDermott is brilliant for making that personnel adjustment, but they need to get better with their safety play faster and younger.
Yeah, totally agree. And they need a chess piece at that position too. They need someone who's versatile, like I'm going to say a name, Kyle Duggar. I know we can't afford Duggar, right? But it would be a dream if he was on this roster. But we need that type that can play in the box, play the post, float, whatever you really need them to do. We tried that out with Rapp this season to a surprising amount of success. And that's just a credit to the way this Bills coaching staff coaches up that secondary for sure. But if we got a blue chip safety with all those athletic traits that had that type of versatility, it improves in the run game with the way we scheme this defense. And Poyer, just again, JP was like my favorite Bill outside of Allen and Diggs from like this era of Buffalo Bills. But this season, he really struggled with his run fits, and you saw it play out in the metrics. When this unit can't rely on Taron Johnson or Jordan Poyer or someone from the back half of the defense to come up and fill their run fits, it really struggles and gives up a lot of chunk yardage. They've got to solidify that and then hope that Bernard and Milano can both come back healthy, because they are sideline to sideline monsters that can also help to limit the run game. So part of it is health, but part of it is the way that this team uses their DBs. They've got to get younger, faster, but also get someone who's got this multiple aspect to their positionality.
Tackling chops.
Please tackle someone in the open field. Yes.
I think you guys nailed it in terms of that need at the safety position, getting younger, getting some key pieces in there. And what's funny is if you go back and look at mock drafts from the past few years, you know, the Bills have been linked to some safeties. Brian Branch is playing in Detroit, was a popular name linked to the Bills in a lot of mock drafts. And you think about a player like that in Buffalo. So there's always going to be those guys that, because safety is almost like, I don't want to say it's the running back of the defense, but there's always those guys that fall in the draft, it feels like, year in and year out, that fall into round two. So I do think that on day two of the draft, the Bills could find a guy like that that could come in and play a big role. It just comes down to, they have a lot of positions where they need to find a guy or guys, plural now. And Sean McDermott, going back to a previous talking point, is going to have to let them actually play. You know, you go back to his regime as head coach, he had to play Tremaine Edmonds because they didn't have a linebacker at that point. I don't think he had to play Osiris Torrance this year, but I think Torrance separated himself at camp to the point where you really couldn't go with Ryan Bates. And a lot of people have pointed out Dalton Kincaid this year. I don't feel like Sean McDermott, you know, started out the year utilizing Kincaid as much as he should have. It wasn't until that injury to Dawson Knox that really opened up the door for Kincaid to have those big moments, those big games. So he's been very hesitant on high picks. It doesn't matter where. He's got to let that trust kind of grow and say, okay, there's going to be some mistakes that get made here, but they're going to be better off for it by the end of the season. Like that Chiefs Super Bowl team you guys mentioned earlier in the show, there were times in the regular season where that unit was bad and they gave up some big plays and they lost some regular season games. But come playoffs, come Super Bowl time, that was a well-oiled machine. And you know, those young guys looked the part. They didn't look like rookies. They looked like they understood the system and they were flying around to the football.
One thing on McDermott, I seem to remember him being a little hot and cold. This was the year before I started covering the team, so maybe I'm remembering this incorrectly, but with Milano, right? Like, wasn't he kind of in and out early?
Oh, yeah.
And but whereas, like, Trey White was the guy from day one. Like, he never, you know, what came off of that. Now, a lot of that early on was they were kind of turning over the roster. They had to play a lot of young guys in 18 and 19, a little bit different than now. But I almost feel like it's like you have to have some type of, you got to make an impression on McDermott for him to trust you in those spots. Otherwise, he kind of like coddles you. And in a lot of ways, like, I think depends on who you are and how you take that. Like a guy like Kyer Elam, that hasn't necessarily worked with him. But like with Kincaid, it was just like, you know, I'm working. When I get my opportunity, I'm going to make the most of it. And I feel like that's the next evolution for McDermott, is finding a way to play guys. Like, I always go back to the last year's Super Bowl team for the Chiefs when they played, like, what was it, like six of their nine rookies, like, in starting roles at some point in the regular season. Like, and a lot of that is a result of injury, but still, like, that experience and that kind of contributions you got in the playoffs from those players was huge. And listen, when you're paying quarterbacks like Mahomes and Allen, you have to find that cheap labor and get them to contribute.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm excited about as a Bills fan, because we're going to see a team that can't afford to pay, you know, Dean Marlowe to come back and play safety because he's trusted, right? Like, they're going to have to stick some, you know, cheap rookie contracts in there, and it's an exciting time. We'll see how it floats.
This was awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. I want to give you guys the floor here for a minute. Plug your podcast, let everybody know where they can find it. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes, so that's probably the easiest way to do it, but let them know what you got coming up and what your plans are for the offseason.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much, Matt. Thanks, Matt and Ryan. We really appreciate the opportunity to come on and speak with you and kind of share some of our insight. Buffalo Bread Pod, at Buffalo Bread Pod on X now, I guess we're calling it. We also have a Facebook page, same name, and BuffaloBreadPod@gmail.com. You can reach us there. We are doing a number of shows. We usually go pretty quiet over the off season. Like I mentioned before, we'll do a mock draft season, preseason view with some AFC partners just before the draft. We'll do post free agency, kind of pre and post free agency, and then we'll do pre and post draft reviews. And then we start really dialing it up in July and August when we get into training camp and into the season. Then we're a weekly podcast, so please check us out.
Yep, we drop every Saturday, and you can find us on Google, Apple, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you can get a podcast, we're on it.
So during the season, is it kind of like the Saturday, like half the show talking about the previous game and half the show previewing the next game?
Yep, exactly. That's usually how it works, yeah.
There we go. Listen, look at that. Perfect.
We also have a segment we like to call Prediction Sure to Go Wrong, where we do, you know, props and we do predictions, score prediction. And it's always a good time because one of my favorite things about the podcast is to pull my notes from the previous pod and call out all the things we got horrifically wrong and how far off we were.
Well, I almost played that game today when I found a tweet from last year from myself that said, I don't see a way the Bills cannot pay Tremaine Edmonds. And I was going to tag Old Takes Exposed. That is looking like a pretty awful take at the time. But, you know, he played really well last year. But to Sean McDermott's credit, I mean, Terrell Bernard has been everything you could have hoped for and more. Speaking of everything you could have hoped for and more, Tops loves local flavor. Tops loves reinvesting in the communities it serves by supplying products from more than 300 local companies, representing thousands of items, putting money back into local economies. Brands like Perry's, Bison, Salen, Lenovo, Bill Gray's, Minio and Sapio, Anchor Bar, Rosina, and so much more. Tops supports and invests in local farmers and merchants, and that includes working with more than 200 local growers during homegrown season. Head over to topsmarkets.com/topsloveslocal to learn more. All right, JJ Bryce, Dan Roberts, Ryan Talbot, we are going to bid you adieu on this Friday evening. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next week. We got a couple shows in the making. We're in the planning stage. We're excited about those. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you so much. Take care. Go Bills.